Good morning, everyone. Happy Tuesday, August 24th, 2021. Welcome to the Bipolar Bear Podcast. Hey, this is like an everyday thing now, right? I've been doing these damn near every day for quite a while. I'm up to like 50 episodes of all this new technological stuff that I've been using for the podcast to make it sound good. So hopefully you're enjoying this. I'm still enjoying doing it, so I'm going to keep on keeping on, man. I sound so upbeat when I start these, don't I? But then I get toward the middle and the end and it's just miserable. I think that's pretty funny. Well, I mean, it's not funny, but I think it's kind of funny that I start off on like this, hey, everything's great. Life's good. Woo. And then by the end of this, I'm friggin' like bitching and screaming and complaining about everything. It's like a freaking downward slope. I start up on the top of the mountain, and by the time I get to the end, I'm at the freaking bottom, spiraling and spinning and rolling out of control. Anyway, that notwithstanding, I'm still digging my my little intro and outro. I know I keep focusing on that, but I think they're pretty cool. I'm pretty stoked about that. Also picked up a new plugin today for my recording studio, so I'm pretty pumped up about using that. I have to wait to close out Logic to actually install it, but it's like a tape emulator, so it does more analog-y type stuff. Even though I have a couple of analog outboard gear, pieces of gear myself, it's cool to have. I don't know. I'm just like obsessed with buying plugins, I guess. That's all there is to it. I really like having them. I have so many, I can't keep track of what I do have and what I don't have. And I pretty much use the same dozen or so every time, depending on what it is I'm doing. Like for podcasting and for book narration, I have the same template that I use that has all the same plugins in it. But then for music, you can get a lot more experimental. But I'm arguing at this point that as much as I love doing music, and I'm going to keep on doing music, I'm finding greater success in other things, and I'm really enjoying podcasting, and I'm really enjoying doing another book. So as it stands right now, if my voice sounds a little bit raspy today, I apologize. I just read another two chapters in my book job, so I'm excited about that. And I'm kind of rolling with it because, like I said, in a couple of weeks, I start a new career that will take me out of the house. So it won't give me as much flexibility to, hey, I'm going to take my lunch and I'm going to record three chapters of a book or ring out a podcast or, you know, play the horn. All that stuff will have to be done at different times, as I've mentioned. So, yeah, I know you're probably sick and tired of hearing that. But I really think that we should talk about the vaccine. And I know this is such a controversial topic, and maybe you don't want to hear this, but this is a monologue, of course, so I'm going to be talking to myself, but, you know, just thinking about these things out loud and tossing ideas up in the air seems kind of strange that the Pfizer vaccine got FDA approval, like lickety split, man. It's like just happened, what, yesterday, I think. I guess they thought that might encourage people that weren't vaccinated to get vaccinated. I really wish we could just get the real information on this, because I would love it to be that, hey, we really just want people to get the vaccine because the vaccine is safe and the vaccine is effective and it will help us get through COVID. But we're not getting that. Now I'm hearing that the vaccine, if you get the flu vaccine, it might be a negative impact on having the COVID vaccine or getting COVID. Like, oh my God. What kind of a world are we living in now? You can't know the right answer to anything, it seems, at this point when it comes to making choices about your body. And now you're going to be forced to do things? Oh, my God. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm being naive that I don't feel like this is going to affect me greatly because I don't really do that much. And quite frankly, if I were to go to a restaurant and they turned me away, I'd go home. You know, I mean, I don't care. I really care about this when it gets to like if they're controlling the food chain and the food supply and things like that, then now what am I supposed to do? But entertainment and things like that really don't define my life. So I'm just happy to be alive every day, to be honest. And it's not that I want to just not do anything. It's just I'm happy to be around the people that I love, my family, do the things that I enjoy doing in the time that I have to do them. You know, I feel blessed in a lot of ways that have nothing to do with me going to some rock concert or going to out to eat to dinner. I mean, those are all nice things, but quite frankly, I don't give a shit if I don't do it ever again. You know, I guess I'd probably be feeling different about this if I was told no. Like, I think we all feel that way. Like when you're told no, just something inside you goes, fuck you, I'm going to do it anyway. at least in me, that's how I feel. It's like, if it's my choice, and I think that's the point of this, then it's my choice to not participate. But if I'm told I cannot participate, that's a different feeling, right? It evokes a different feeling inside, and not necessarily a better one. So I'm not entirely sure how I feel about the FDA approving Pfizer, because I took Moderna. So that doesn't affect me in really in any way other than wondering why the Moderna vaccine has not made it through the FDA approval process at this point. But at the same time, how much weight do I want to give and confidence do I really have in the FDA? You know, does it really matter at this point? Millions and millions of people have already taken it. I mean, we're all actively in this experiment, if that's what you want to call it. Anyone that's taken one or two of the vaccines, you know, either the one shot or the two shot, I guess, you know, we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. You know, as I've said myself, you know, I guess I'm a fairly healthy individual. I didn't really have any kind of issues with the vaccine, you know, when I had it. So from my personal experience, I don't know if it's doing something to me long term, but in the short term, I didn't have any reactions to it at all, really. So my wife actually said, I wonder if you got a placebo and we're just part of a big experiment. And I never really thought about it to that extent. Like I'm thinking like, oh yeah, everybody says we're part of a big experiment and, you know, yeah, okay. You know, they're trying the drug out on us, but I didn't actually think in my mind that it's possible that if I'm in part of an experiment that I was one, you know, of the random people that would have gotten a placebo for one or both or, you know, one of these shots. And, you know, the reason I think about that is because the second shot I got, I had no reaction at all. So the first shot, my arm was pretty sore for several days and I felt pretty tired that same day, but that was it. No other symptoms. The second shot, nothing. I had no sore arm and zero symptoms of any kind. I was not tired, nothing. So I wonder if they're doing stuff like that. Now, I don't know how they're keeping track of that, because do I have to? Yeah, you actually had to show your ID and I had to set it up online. So yeah, I guess they would know if I had one shot and one placebo or two shots or no shots and have a record of that. And then if I end up going to the hospital or getting sick with COVID, cross-referencing those records and going, ah, look, so the guy had one shot, didn't get the second shot, got COVID. This is how bad it is. The guy had two shots, got COVID. This is how bad it is. The guy had, you know, got two placebo shots, so no vaccine, and this is how bad it is. So I wonder if they're really fucking around with us like that too. Because I mean, in a trial, that's how it's done, right? There's placebo. So all the people that are participating in the trial don't all get the medicine or whatever they're administering. You get some people get it, some people don't, and then they measure the results. And you, as the participant, don't actually know. So me, as a participant in the COVID experiment, I wouldn't know if they gave it to me or not. All I know is they stuck something in my arm twice. It says I got the vaccine on the card I have, but you know, I don't know what all those little numbers mean, or maybe there's ways that they can track like the sticker that they put on there to tell you if that was placebo or if that was the actual mRNA vaccine. I mean, how do I know? But it wouldn't surprise me at all to know that that's what they did. Absolutely crazy. That coupled with all of the crap that we've been seeing on, I don't know if it's just me, but I've been seeing a ton of like, hey, look, there's a UFO. Oh, look, there's an alien. Oh, all this, like, not shitty footage, but better footage. Now, of course, you could argue that CGI is a real thing and you can make almost anything look real now. So that's interesting, but it would appear that a lot of this stuff is being recorded on people's phones. And whether or not it's edited or altered or whatever, I don't know. Like what I've said here on the podcast is that I'm recording all of my podcasts through the Shure SM7B microphone, but I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 plugins in my workstation that are affecting my voice. So you're really not hearing my real voice. You're hearing my voice enhanced to the nth degree so that it sounds big and thick and boomy and what you'd expect a broadcast voice to sound like. The only variable in this is the timbre of my voice. right? So it's really me talking right now, but you're hearing me through a whole bunch of processing of the signal that makes my voice sound way better. Not unlike autotune. I mean, I'm not using autotune because I'm not singing. So being in tune has nothing to do with this, but it's the same principle, is that when you sing or play an instrument or whatever through autotune, it fixes everything and it makes it sound lock on, lock spot on, man. It sounds really good because it's taken what you've already done and altered it just a little bit so that it now locks in perfectly. You can move notes around, front, behind, you know, so that they're on time, off time. I mean, you can really do a lot of cool stuff now. So I can, and I'm not a video editor at all. So I can only imagine that with Photoshop or some video editing suite, you can do damn near anything if you have enough compute power and the skills to do it. I mean, arguably, I do all of the types of recording that I do, whether it's music, voiceover, podcasting, everything is done on a laptop from 2015. So yeah, you don't even need like cutting edge, best case scenario technology to do really high quality, professional sounding audio work anymore. It's just literally in a laptop and a bunch of software. So yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going on with the quick turnaround for the FDA on the Pfizer vaccine. And, you know, what does that mean for Johnson & Johnson and Moderna? But I stay up to date on these things as far as TikTok is concerned. Like, I'm not out there researching what's going on with the vaccines and why Moderna doesn't have the FDA approval yet and blah, 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 blah. I could assume two things. One, it's that it takes, you know, long period of time. Two, hopefully, maybe, you know, 1A, they're actually doing a better job at trying to vet out their vaccine to make sure that it's worthy to pass. Or, you know, two, it's just not going to pass because there's shit wrong with it. And boohoo, I took it. So, you know, everybody like me that took it, we might have some issues down the road. My wife is actually going, I think Thursday of this week, to have an echocardiogram because she's been having a lot of struggle when she's a runner. So she's in good shape. You know, she runs several miles a day most of the time. And, you know, she's been noticing that she's just super winded and way more out of breath than normal. And her heart rate is higher. So just from a precautionary standpoint, she's going to get some tests done to make sure that she doesn't have like any enlargement of the heart or any inflammation in her lungs or, you know, anything going on there. She does have asthma. So it's entirely possible that, you know, this has nothing to do with anything other than the evolution of asthma within her body. And she's getting older. And this is just kind of like the nature of the beast. It's just going to, you know, over a long period of time, it kind of progressively gets worse, just like everything else as you get older. You know, like my knees used to be a lot less noisy and more stable than they are now. You know, I mean, I'm almost 50, so they start to wear out. Things like that happen as you get older. It's just natural. Like my fingers, I don't know if I'd say it's arthritis, but I definitely have like my hands, I don't know, they crack funny. They, like, my joints feel kind of strange these days. I don't know if it's from all the horn playing and, you know, up and down with those three fingers and the way you position your hand, or if it's the fact that I have my hand on a mouse like 8 hours a day. And that, you know, is crazy. I even have a glove, a compression glove, like a copper fit type glove that I wear because, you know, the fabric is supposed to help your circulation and all that stuff. I don't know that it actually does or not, but I wear the thing anyway, just because, you know, can't hurt, right? It's like wearing those copper bracelets that golfers used to always have on or used to always promote. Remember that stuff? I don't know. Maybe you don't follow golf, but yeah, there was all these copper bracelets that guys would wear, and they were supposed to, you know, bring energy to your body and keep everything in homeostasis and blob of all this other shit. But I don't know that it actually works or not. So yeah, I've got a copper compression glove, and it's fingerless because you can't really do anything if you've got a full glove on, like with your phones and stuff like that. But it's nice because it's, you know, it's got grip on the hand, and it's got, I moved my face away from the mic there. It's got, you know, it's like silky and soft and stretchy, but you can feel it kind of squeezing your hand. So it's kind of nice. I should probably wear it more often, but anyway, now that we're talking about compression gloves for old people hands, I talk about the most ridiculous but real. This podcast is about as real as it gets, man. You're getting the real me. And the funniest thing about this, though, is that who gives a shit? I mean, this is a great podcast if I was somebody known or famous, right? If I was Bill Burr, I'm sure his podcast is great just listening to a guy like that ramble on, because you know who he is, you know about him, you know his sense of humor, you know his whole shtick, you get that. But with a guy like me, I'm just some guy. So I think it's funny that how little I actually matter in this, when you look at it in context like that, like what I'm doing is completely arbitrary and meaningless because no one knows who I am. If I was some famous person, people would be listening to this and taking it all to heart and thinking it was the greatest stuff ever said. But because I'm just some shithead down the street that no one knows, I'm just some nobody, you know, who gives a crap what I'm saying? But I think it's funny because, you know, I'm talking in this thing as if I'm somebody. And it's not intentional. It's just, this is honestly how I am. You know, I'm very comfortable in these kind of things. I have no problem talking to people in groups. And in fact, I enjoy doing that because one of my strengths is to command a room. And that's, again, something I got to work on not doing so much in a couple weeks at this new job. I want to not come off with such a domineering presence. I'd prefer to be much more demure or reserved and approachable rather than walking into a room and just taking over. And then it's like, okay, well, this guy's just, there's no getting a word in edgewise. As you've noticed, if you've listened to any of these podcasts, I don't give a whole lot of room in between what I'm saying, even when I'm saying absolutely nothing, for you to stick in your little blurb or you to get in there. You literally have to rudely interrupt me. And it's not even rude, because I'm being rude by not allowing you to talk. I'm very uncomfortable in silence. So I have people that I've worked with and people that I managed and stuff in my current position where they're much more reserved and quiet than I am. They don't have the same kind of personality. And speaking with them took a great deal of effort on my part, because I had to get comfortable in the silence. You know, when I'm speaking like I am now, it's just on and on and on and on and on. But when you're waiting for somebody to reply, you have to resist the urge, number one, to continue to talk when there's silence. And number two, to not start talking again in the silence and let the person have a minute, literally a minute, to be in silence, compose their thought, think about what they want to say, and then actually say it. I think that's critically important, and it's really hard for my personality to do that without being very conscious of it. Like, I don't normally just do that. I expect people to interrupt me and talk over me and things like that, so that I, oh, okay, what'd you say? Yeah, oh, okay, you're right. That kind of a thing, where instead of saying much less and then pausing for much longer. I have to work on that. I have to work on saying less. I think not contextually, like I want to encapsulate my point, but I need to say it in a more concise manner. And then I need to allow people to digest it, think about it, compose a response, and then respond. So that's a long period of pause, if you will, for someone that's not like me. Like, I just blew right out of my mouth. It just comes right out. I'm already thinking of the answer when you started the question. You know, I've already started to formulate what I'm going to say. Some people are actually listening, and I think that probably says I'm a terrible listener. You know, if someone's actually listening and they're not thinking about what they want to say, then it makes sense that they would need time after they are completed listening to you to then process what was said and then think about what they want to say and then actually say it. So I think I've probably been around a lot of people who listen very well, and I don't. I mean, not that that's funny or something to be proud of, but yeah, I have at least identified that I definitely need to work on that for sure. So one of my takeaways from all this is I need to learn to be a better listener, and I need to talk less and not think that because I'm not saying something that no progress is being made, or people are just waiting. I mean, there's a point where you know, somebody has to step in and move the conversation forward if it's not going to move forward on its own. I don't mean that. I mean, allowing someone an ample amount of time based on their personality and their disposition to allow them to think about what it is they want to say in response and rebuttal and actually say it. And then don't cut them off. And man, I do that a lot too. And I don't mean to. I just, I am who I am. It's a difficult thing to overcome. And I'm saying this for myself. Garrett, you need to start listening better. You need to be a better listener. You need to focus on what other people are saying to you. Listen to it. Think about it. Contemplate it. Debate it in your mind. Then think about a reply and a response, and then actually respond. And afford people that same courtesy and that same opportunity. Don't overspeak everyone. Don't rush to just say the next thing to sound like a smart guy. I think it ends up making you sound like an idiot. And we didn't really get to this in my current position, but I've always been a huge proponent of transparent peer reviews. Like, I really want to know what you think about what I'm doing. Am I doing a good job or am I not? And if I'm not, what am I doing wrong? Because I sincerely want to fix it and improve. I mean, I'm really not one of those people that wants to go through the motions of it just to say we went through it, but I'm hoping that I get a good score because I think I'm flawless. I know I'm fucking up a lot of stuff and doing things wrong. And I really appreciate sincerity when it comes to that kind of feedback. And I want transparency. If you think I suck at something, and I know this is ridiculous because, good luck finding people to do this, but I want you to tell me. You know, if I'm not doing something well, I definitely want to know. And that's one of my huge issues with the company I'm leaving now is that for like 18 months, these idiots never once told me I was doing anything wrong and just let me keep on doing it wrong. No leadership, no guidance, no mentorship, no nothing. Just in their opinion, if they thought I was doing everything wrong, why in the world would you not say something? Even if you did it in a dicky way and were, just like, well, Garrett, we need to sit down and I'm going to need to write you up for a performance review and you're not doing a good job and these are the reasons why and let's put you on a performance improvement plan so that we can really, highlight the things that you need to improve on and make sure that you've actually made strides and improvements. Not even that. I mean, they didn't even have the balls to hold me accountable. And that probably is, quite honestly, the reason I'm leaving. I mean, I just have no respect for that approach at all. It's just ridiculous in every possible way. You don't even have the spine or the fortitude or the professionalism to say, hey, you are fucking this up. And I don't mean that's a professional way to say it. I'm saying it my way, right? What I mean, Garrett, you're not achieving the goals that we expect from you. This is what you need to do. Where is the guidance? Where, these people are above me. So they should be providing mentorship, leadership, guidance, all that crap. Even though I'm a leader, there are the CEO of the company is the highest ranking leader. If that person doesn't know what they're doing, then how successful are you going to be? I was watching a video the other day and it was talking about toxic work environments. And it was so poignant because everything that was listed in a toxic work environment is what's going on where I work now. People leaving, people unhappy, people, talking shit, people being disengaged, all the going down this long list of all the attributes of a toxic work environment. I'm in it. And not for long. I'm on my way out now. So that's a positive thing, but that's why I'm leaving. I get paid a lot of money. It has nothing to do with my salary or my compensation. I make a lot of money at this place. I mean, yeah, granted, I'm going to make more at this other place, but it's not more enough that it really is that significant. I mean, 15 grand isn't life-changing of money. It's not like I'm going to this job and I'm making $100,000 more. No, that would be an unfair comparison. I mean, I'm making $15,000 more. Big deal. That's not really like $200 a paycheck. I mean, it's nothing. It's like getting a 50 cent raise. Thanks, but it didn't really do anything. Who gives a shit? But at the same time, it has nothing to do with financial compensation or benefits or any of that. It has to do with poor management, poor leadership, poor company structure, poor company culture. And you could argue that, well, they're working on it and they're trying to make it better, but they're really not. All they're doing is talking about it and, that's it. Now, like I said before, they've walked back the whole work from home thing. Now, well, you got to come in at least once a week. And pretty soon it's going to be like, you're going to have to come in all the time, because it was already, you don't have to come in at all. Now it's okay, one day a week, maybe 2 days a week. They're just going to make up these reasons why you need to come into the office that are work related, air quotes. That it's bullshit, especially for a position like mine or the other architect, where who are we collaborating with? There's nobody else doing this stuff. So I'm not collaborating with anybody. And I wouldn't be collaborating with anybody if I was in the office. I'm not doing it now because there's no one to do it with. I collaborate more with the customers and the clients that we have on the technical stuff, moreover than I do with, well, 100% in comparison to what I do with the people that I work with, because there is no one. There's no other technology person I can really bounce things off of here because nobody else knows any of this stuff. I don't know. Crazy stuff. Anyway, before long, I won't be talking about this shit anymore because hopefully I'll be in I'll be in a new position, and hopefully it will be a much, much better fit and the people will be much better and it'll just be awesome and I'll be very excited about the whole thing. Man, I get so much junk email. It's unreal. Sorry, I'm just checking email real quick and it's just like a barrage of crap that it's not that I don't want it. Like, it's not spam. It's just some places just send too much shit. I don't need that much email. Anyway. Yeah. So I don't know. What was I talking about? Who knows? Does it really matter at this point? No, not really. Interestingly enough. Oh, that's why I checked my email, because I was thinking about this. I did just for fun. One of the other positions that I had applied for, because I never give up hope until the last minute, you know, maybe a better opportunity will come along. I'd love to continue to stay at home. That's ideal for me, is working from home, because I want to do all this other shit too. I'm so selfish. I want to do podcasts. I want to do voiceover and narration, and I want to do music, and I want to be home with my family. You know, I really enjoy that. Moreover than going into an office and being with a bunch of strangers. I mean, hopefully they'll be really nice people and everything will be cool. And maybe it'll be everything that I hoped that this last position was. I'm excited, at least at the beginning, I'll be very excited to see what this is really going to be like and, you know, where we're going to go with it. And the fact that I don't have to bury myself in technology and learn all this shit that I don't know how to do all over again, that'll kind of be nice too. Because I'm at the point in my life where it's not that I don't want to learn new things. It's just, you know, I'm almost 50. I've been doing things a long time, and I feel like what I've done thus far has merit, value, and is something that I would want to share and utilize as it is. Not that I can't improve. And, you know, like I said, I want to work on my leadership skills and get better at being a leader and learn more about that. So I'm hoping there's some opportunities at this place for some classes or some courses or some boot camps or something on true leadership, like real stuff, not this bullshit that I went through at this place I'm at now, like real things. And again, interestingly enough, I'm reading a book right now as part of a narration project that I was picked for. And it's really good. It's actually a really good book. It's like a double win there. It's like, not only am I reading, I got another project to read on, I'm going to get paid for it, but I'm also reading a really good book. I mean, the information in this book is very relevant and useful to me. So that's a bonus right there, big time. And the book I read prior to that, was also to a lesser extent the same way, only because my kids are older now and it was more applicable to young children than it was young adults. My son is 21 now, so he's full adult, that kind of a thing. But those are the benefits to, you know, if you ever thought about getting into reading books and stuff, it's really good because, you know, depending on, like, my voice has, I guess, a sound that's probably best suited for kind of instructional type reading. Like, I'm not really a romance novel guy or, you know, I'm sure I could do a character, right? Like for a TV show or a cartoon or something like that. But I don't think that my voice has the sound that you want to listen to for anything other than like maybe a meditation kind of thing or like an instructional tutorial kind of thing. You know, it's very specific. Like, you know, that both books that selected me, that's what they were, right? So I'll just go based on experience. And I've applied and sent in auditions to like 50 other books. And these are the only two I've gotten so far. And they both reached out to me on their own, which I guess means I don't know that really submitting an audition is that effective. It seems like once I start to continue, as I continue to build up my repertoire, I think my profile will start to speak for me and become my resume. And I won't have to worry so much about actively seeking opportunities, but I think opportunities will actively find me, which is really cool because, you know, I mean, if I can make a few hundred bucks here and there off doing this, I mean, I would love to be able to do this every week. It'd be really cool to have a book a week to read. I mean, that's a lot of reading, but I mean, realistically, these things are 3 to 4 hours. It's not a super huge commitment of time. I mean, it does take its toll on my voice, but I'm also doing almost an hour long podcast as well as I just read 2 chapters of a book. So I've been speaking now consistently and consecutively for like the last 2 hours. So, you know, my voice, because I've told you before, because of the heart surgeries and the intubation and the ventilators and all the shit they put down your throat when you go through a surgery like that, I have polyps or nodules on my vocal cords. So my voice actually does get tired. So I will lose my voice and I'll have a sore voice again tonight. I had a sore throat yesterday, but it's just because I'm talking so much. You know, I'm doing it to myself and I don't have a long, I don't have a lot of endurance with my voice. I can't just go on and on and on. Even if I'm on a phone call, anything like that, where I have to talk for an extended period of time, definitely makes my throat sore. So maybe I should go make some green tea with honey right now. Hang on. I'll be right back. Ah, the magic of technology. I can step away for 10 minutes, go make a cup of tea. And for you, it was instantaneous. I really like doing this show more on the digital platform like this rather than on my phone because it seems like the editing and the post-production is way better. I mean, not only does it sound significantly better, we already have established that, but it gives me the opportunity to do that kind of a thing. Granted, I have to sit in front of the computer to do this, which again is one of the, I think I mentioned this, the original time I had started this podcast years ago, it was called The Daily Commute. And it was because at the time I was working for a company that was in the city of Buffalo, downtown Buffalo, and I had a long ass drive every day there and back. And I'm like, you know, what a good use of my time while I'm in the car for 45 minutes, I'll just do a podcast in the morning and at night. So, you know, how I feel on the way in and what happened all day long on the way out. I'm like, oh, that'd be really cool. But disappointingly, not only does the phone sound like shit through the car audio, you know, your phone, you know, Apple CarPlay, it like hooks up to your car. It sounds terrible. But even doing in the car with earbuds and using the microphone that way, there's so much ambient noise while you're driving. It just really is an annoying and shitty show. It didn't sound like this, where this is nice and quiet. And, you know, I actually did make one adjustment to one of my plugins. I was using a noise floor of 30 dB on the NS1 noise suppressor. And I realized it wasn't clipping out everything. So I moved it up to 40. So now this podcast should really be nice and crispy and clean. Like when I take a pause, that noise floor should be completely gone. Yeah. And if I'm looking at it on the screen, I'm like watching this plugin right now. I know you can't see it, but it goes from 0 and it's just ready. 1, 2, 3. Yeah. Minus 48. So it's perfect. How far down it goes. And I have it set at a setting of 40. So you shouldn't be able to hear anything in between when I'm speaking. It should be nice and quiet. And that's actually what I'm using for the book narration now too, because what I was doing, and this was a lot more time consuming, was going through after I did each, because there's a very specific way that you have to do ACI book narration. You know, there's every single aspect of it is a file of itself that you have to render in a certain way. And, you know, Amazon is really picky. They will kick your shit out if it's not, if you're not at the right decibel level, if you don't have the right kilohertz rendering. I mean, it's a real pain in the neck until you master what the settings need to be, which is why, you know, I do that as well in Logic, and I have a template for narration, because there's a specific setting that it has to be every time you do that to get it to be accepted by their algorithm, and then have a person, even to get to the point where the person can review it, it has to make it through the algorithmic analyzation or analytics first. So yeah, I mean, you know, I have a specific setup for that, but I'm using this NS1 noise suppressor from Waves. And, you know, I've talked a little bit of smack about Waves. I like their plugins. I just don't like, their upgrade model and their subscription crap, where you don't get upgrades after like one upgrade and then you got to pay for it again. And it's like hundreds of dollars. I don't know. It's just dumb. But this particular plugin, the NS1 noise suppressor, I would highly recommend getting this. This was a total game changer for me, at least on the podcasting side, because when you are not talking, it is very, very quickly dropping out all of the, it's a gate basically, is, you know, it's a noise suppressor, but it's a gate. So as soon as it stops, you know, getting volume from my voice, it goes completely silent, but it's really smooth in the way that it does it. So the plugin is really well done. I like it quite a bit. And it's enabled me to use it in the broadcast or the narration world, because before, what I was doing was taking every single file and in Logic going in and selecting the silence and having the silence removed. And it was making like 700 to 800 chops of, like, every time I say something, like all those spaces are silence, and they're interpreted based on a decibel threshold that you set when you cut it out. And it's crazy. Like it took me like 25 minutes to do every track in the first book, because I did it that way, where I had to go in and remove all the silence to make sure there was no clicking or popping or weird sounds. But the nice thing about the NS1 is it does that automatically. And I know you're probably like, well, you're a moron because a regular gate will do that. But for whatever reason, I have other gates, and I was using a gate and it was not doing this. So whatever this thing has done, this thing was absolutely designed for podcasting. I mean, it even has a preset called Voice Podcast, and that's what I use. But it's, you know, set it at 40. This thing really makes a clean, clean recording. So clean that I can use it on book narration, which is super, super specific and nuanced about what it will and will not accept based on ambient noise. So anyway, if you're looking for a cool podcast noise suppressor, the NS1 from Waves is the best one I found so far. And that's what I use on all of these, is the NS1. But I did just make a change. I had it at minus 30. Now I have it at minus 40. So I think minus 40 is better. It doesn't affect any of the outbound, like the sound. It just shuts the noise down even further. It's really good. But I really like this plugin quite a bit. I'm watching it work here, and it kills. I actually leave it on. Typically, you don't leave on plugins while you're recording, because it's fairly CPU intensive to do that. But it sounds so good for me to have just the SSL master compressor, the Kramer EQ strip, the channel strip, the HLS channel strip that I like really a lot for this, and then the NS1 are the only things that I have actively listening. So while I'm doing the podcast, to me, this sounds so good. And then once I add the five other plugins that do everything else, like the vocal rider to make sure the volume stays the same across the whole performance and the whole podcast, the de-esser to make sure the S's get clipped right so they're not too harsh. And then I have a master console that I use for the final production, another noise suppressor that does the whole signal at the end, and then a limiter that does my final output to make sure that my gain staging, you know, for the final render is correct. And I also do, just so you know, I don't know how you do your podcast, but I don't render these as WAV files. I render them as MP3 files. And this is embarrassing. I kind of forgot why I did that. I know that for ACX, for book narration, that's a requirement. You can't upload WAV files for that, and they have to be 44.1 kilohertz. That's just the requirement for their file standards and the guidelines that they provide you, and it won't be accepted if you don't use that. But I don't know that the podcast matters. I'm pretty sure you can do that in Wave or AIFF or whatever as well. But for me, because I have so many of these and I've kept them all, I've just rendered them all as MP3s. And the beauty of having the BX limiter, the BrainWorks limiter that I use, the TruePeak limiter, is it's really like a mastering. You know, you can set it to the minus 14 decibel LUFS meter, and it will just, it's perfect. So I can do everything that I want to do now from a music production standpoint, from a podcast production standpoint, and from a book narration production standpoint, all from within Logic. I don't have to use, you know, I have Ozone, I think 9 at this point, but I don't even really use it for anything anymore because I can do everything right within Logic. And BrainWorks plugins from Plugin Alliance, they've done such a great job of making plugins for the most part. There's a couple that are kind of CPU hogs, but for the most part, their plugins are really CPU friendly. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, when you use plugins on audio, it uses a lot of your CPU. And the more you stack, the more you use, the more CPU is going to get sucked up by that. So I've reached plenty of times, I've reached points in production where my CPU is just clipped and the song stops playing back because it's overloaded. I don't have enough threads in my CPU to manage in the buffer. And so you get IO errors and all kinds of audio clipping and problems. But I almost exclusively use, there's a few things I use. So I use all of the Plugin Alliance plugins on everything. I use some Waves plugins for sure. And there's a couple of things here and there that I like to use. For other things, like I have a reverb that I like, a couple of delays that I really like. There's a couple like lo-fi plugin that are not BrainWorks. You know, there's some stuff out there that I use for very specific things, but that's only in the music world. That's not for podcasting or book narration at all. Sorry, I don't know why this kind of went off on a tangent where I was discussing, you know, more audio techniques and things like that, but I find it interesting and I think it's so cool. You know, that we can do so much now with the technology that we have that was just not possible when I was coming up, you know, even musically or in any other way. I mean, to have a microphone like this for $400, I mean, you know, you had to have, these things were thousands and thousands of dollars when I was a kid. So there was just no possible way I could have afforded to have a high quality microphone like this when I was a kid. But now, you know, young kids can have this stuff for really affordable pricing. And you can come up with, you know, amazing sounding recordings that are professional level on all fronts. The only variable in there truly is, you know, the content that you're providing. And that ultimately is, you know, without question, the most important thing. Because as I've said before, even if you have a lousy, kind of a not a great production standard, if you have really good content that people are really interested in, they're going to listen to it anyway. They're going to listen to you even if you sound like you're talking through an old-fashioned telephone. You know, if you have good stuff that people want to hear, that's always been the case. You know, an old band that had a shitty demo that was done on a 4-track recorder, but the song blew up. I mean, nobody cared that it was shitty quality, really. They really liked the song. So ultimately, your content is everything. And, you know, what you're putting out there and what you're talking about. And if it's interesting to people, great. If it's not interesting to people, and even though it sounds amazing, it's still not going to jump off and do anything because people aren't interested in listening to it, especially with a podcast like this where it's a pure monologue for 45 minutes. I mean, if you're not interested in what I'm saying, this is not something you're going to keep listening to, right? I mean, if you're not digging who I am as a person and kind of vibing with me and relating to me and finding anything that I'm saying in any way funny, valuable, useful, why would you listen to this for 45 minutes? I mean, literally, you just wouldn't. There'd be no reason to do it. So hopefully some of the content that I provide here is of value to others other than myself. And arguably the last 10 minutes that I just rambled on here doesn't really help me much because obviously I'm already doing this stuff in my podcast. But so sometimes there are unselfish segments to this show or to these episodes. Anyway, with that, I guess let's get into our poem of the day. Can you guess what book I'm reading it out of? Poetic Rhetoric, Nonsensical Blasphemy by Garrett Michael Conklin. You know, we've actually read quite a few poems so far. That's crazy. Huh. Yeah, I'm on page 51. I mean, we haven't read 51 poems. Well, yeah, actually, have we? This will be, I think this is episode 52. Let me look it up. Yeah, and this will be episode 52. Holy crap. That's a lot of episodes. And if I've read a poem for every one of them, we're on poem 52. Okay, anyway, this one is entitled Darkest Fear. This is what I look like on the inside, clearly hiding something foul, a darker side. I try hard to contain him. Perhaps therapy will retrain him. I often wonder why I'm not as I appear. I don't acknowledge that I am engrossed with fear. To quiet the storm, a drug I have not found, the numbing drowned, the putrid sound. I rage and fight and utter and spit. I'm intentionally having an infinite fit. Not sure what the point is, if this is what it means to be fine. Unsure why I believe anything, if this is my only sign. Going about my day, dreaming of something that doesn't exist. Live out my day, doing what I cannot resist. I've of course taken it out on my loves, the only ones pure as doves. The very same who love without condition are those I choose to crucify with my rendition. I know it's wrong the moment it's done, but in that instant there is no hope, absolutely none. I'm aware of who I am inside, which makes it worse than had I simply denied and died. Your own reflection can be the inverse of clear, shining a light upon the darkest fear. Well, that was kind of deep. Rolling in the deep. Yeah. Anyway, that wasn't bad, actually. I kind of like that one. But it, you know, sadly, it talks about me and what a piece of shit that I am and how poorly I treat those around me that really do and, you know, love me unconditionally. And most poignantly, my children that, you know, have no real stake in the game in terms of anything that goes on between my wife and I or any of the other issues that happen in my life. It's just the way that it is, man. And, you know, to my three kids out there, I love you guys. You know I haven't been the greatest father that I could be or that maybe you've hoped for in life, but I really am trying and I have tried and I love you with all my heart. So on that note, let's end it for today. And as always, to all of you out there, including myself, Garrett, thank you for listening. I do appreciate everyone's support. If you like what you're listening to, this is a shameless plug. If you could give me, you know, some decent feedback on Apple Podcasts, I've been told that does a lot for helping a show grow. So that would be really cool. But either way, I appreciate your listenership and, you know, just coming along for the ride with me, man. Thanks. Okay. Have a good one. Talk to you soon. Bye.